Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome in Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, reporter Nick Keyser here with you. Hope you had a great weekend. Fantastic start to your day. A lot to get into this morning as Robbie Stanley is actually going to join us in about 30 minutes to talk more about the Predators, get his thoughts on that. Jonathan Hutton at 10:30. Michelle, how are you?
Doing good this morning. Got to see some friends this weekend, watch some college basketball. It was a good weekend all around. See my brother. Feeling good this morning.
That's good. This weekend for me was, you know, is a very important weekend because the Daytona 500 was yesterday.
Can't say I watched.
That's okay. I am one of those people that when it comes to NASCAR, if you don't like it, that's fine. Don't diss it. Don't diss something that you don't like because you don't understand it or don't like it, and I like it. But if you don't watch it, that's fine. I'm not gonna force you. But I love it. I watched every lap. I might have had my mid stage two nap, which is like a tradition for me. So middle point of the race, you know, take a little snooze. But Ricky Stenhouse Jr. gets the win, the longest Daytona 500 in history. It was actually like the Daytona 530. Because of overtime, but he's from just outside of Memphis, so congrats to him on getting that win. But let's talk Preds. That's where we start today, because I told you, we talked about this last week, even though I wasn't even including a 5-1 loss to Vegas, which was ugly after the All-Star break, a 2-1 barely win overtime win in Philly, a 4-2 very bad loss to Arizona. I was basically saying, you know, Boston, Florida, Minnesota, we're going to kind of tell you a story. Well, they went 1-2, or I'm sorry, 2-1. Yeah, 1-2. Sorry if I could speak. 1-2 in that. Math is very hard. They get blown out by Boston. They win 7-3 against Florida and then lose yesterday, which, I know we've said it's a heartbreaker because they tied it up with 47 seconds left, but they were down the whole game. In that one. And so I think there was a little bit of false hope that might have been created, and then they end up losing with 20 seconds left in regulation. And so things not looking good for this team right now. And I am in the crowd of, I think it's time, if I'm David Poile, to start picking up the phone and listening.
Yeah, I was in that category, I'd say, after the Bruins loss, after the 5-0 loss. And it's not so much just losing to the Bruins, because they are probably going to win the President's Trophy. They're the best team in the NHL right now. It was more so the way you lost, a shutout at home, right? Coming off that loss to Arizona, which you knew you couldn't have if you're still hoping to get into the playoffs. And then I was very much to the, okay, you're selling at the deadline, but I was giving a slim opening in the door for this weekend to see what they'd be able to do. The Florida Panthers game, I mean, talk about an offensive performance from the team. I think the fan base was feeling excited. I think I tweeted something like, this team confuses me, when the final score was 7-3. And last night, although Minnesota was up, I thought, oh, okay, well, here you go. They're showing us. Then the Preds respond. They're able to tie the game.
Yep.
You get kind of excited of, okay, now they can only be 3 points back if they get the win in regulation. Then you lose, and now you're 7 points back.
So I will say, I will never, ever, 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 ever root for this team to lose by any means. I don't want anybody to take that I would ever root for them to lose. But being a realist, you know, I sat there and I thought, okay, if they – and I thought this before the game. If they win this game, like you said, they are in a much better spot than they were going into it. But – because of how the season has gone, where it's been very up and down, and they've pretty much been in this purgatory of they're just outside of a playoff spot and they can't seem to make any traction, I looked at it as this is gonna create the roller coaster ride for the fans and for David Poile of, like, I'm right there. What the heck do I do? Do I sell and just say, hey, we're probably not going to, you know, I know we're not going to make it, even though I see the door. I see the door is open and I see it, I just can't walk through it. That's kind of where they're at. And so if you win that game, it creates some of that even more. Now I feel like the picture is getting clearer for him, and I think he knows that. He's not. I don't think he's going to come on tomorrow with Robbie and Rex Road and admit that necessarily. No. But it's feeling that way. I mean, you've won. You've played since the All-Star break. 7 games, is that right? 6 games.
Six.
You've won 6 games, or you've played 6 games and you've won 2 of them. That's where you're at.
And before the break, you know, showing some promising hockey, 3-game win streak, you break, and now David Poile, I mean, when he puts together a team, you know, he believes that they can make a run in the playoffs. We all picked this team to make the playoffs this year. And I think you made a nice point there, Chase, on if they were able to beat Minnesota and only be 3 games back now from making the play, or sorry, 3 points back from making the playoffs rather than 7 now, it puts them in a harder situation of, okay, well maybe not yet. Let me hold on. Let's play maybe another game or two. Let me see what they can do and kind of hold on to that hope of, okay, well, maybe they're starting to put some things together. They had a nice gritty win, a comeback win after being down. But after this loss, it's a little bit clearer to him. Okay, now the likelihood, I think it's at an 8-9% chance right now to make the playoffs. You start really calling around and seeing what offers people are able to make for a Matthias Ekholm who's been thrown out there, Tanner Jeannot has been thrown out there. And you really start thinking, okay, what can we get for these players?
So, and I want to address that too. And so you have to decide if you're David Poile, are we going full on rebuild, which I don't believe they're going to do. I think it's going to be more of a retool. A full on rebuild would be Saros is on the trade block, which I don't believe that for 1 second. So, you know, I read these, you know, fans and hear other media members saying like, okay, we'll trade this person and this person, see what you can get for this. You do have to have players. Like, you do have to field a team. Mm-hmm. And Milwaukee needs to field a team. So, I mean, you do have to factor that in. I think this is an opportunity where you have some guys that you kind of feel like you know what you might be able to get for them. You see what you can do. Like, I think Tanner Jeannot is somebody that could fetch you maybe a second round pick because he's the type of player a team going into the playoffs would want because he's a physical type guy.
But on the flip side, he's also a young guy that if you're building around this young core, sure, you want to keep. So sure, you have to weigh that.
I mean, Ekholm is one that, yeah, you're probably going to get some calls on him, but mm-hmm, he's got term. And, you know, if you're just retooling, is that somebody you want to lose? McDonough's another one. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not asking Yossi to waive his no trade, I believe. I don't think you're at that point. You just re-signed Forsberg, and I don't think you're doing that. You're not going to get – I mean, you could listen to offers for Duchesne. Don't think you're going to get much for him. Johansson, same thing. Mm-hmm. Johansson might be a little easier to move because there's only 2 years left, but you're probably going to have to retain some salary if you were to do that. So it's not as easy as, you know, you might think it might be. To go ahead and move some of these players. But I do think that things are about to pick up with 5 games left before the trade deadline, that David's going to work the phones. I just feel personally that we're past the point of, well, let's see what happens in the next couple games. I kind of think you know.
So do you think right now, if you had to take a guess, these next couple games as feel as on ice play, they don't matter? You think David Poile has made up his decision?
I don't think he's made his decision. I'm saying I've made my decision. I don't think he's made his decision. I feel like there's just this roller coaster game we're going to keep playing. They should win the next 3. They should win the next 3. I can't sit here and tell you that they're going to. I mean, they've already lost to Arizona. They lost to Arizona, you know, a few games ago. So they play them again. Vancouver sucks.
Yeah, they're not playing good teams.
San Jose sucks. Arizona sucks. They should win those games. But my guess is they're probably not going to win all 3, just the way that they have played. So if you can sit here and you can say that you know that, which, you know, we don't know definitively, but that you have a good idea of that, then what are we doing? That's my, and look, this is coming from the guy that is always glass half full. So if I'm saying that now and I'm looking at, hey, let's start working the phones, see what can happen, then that's honestly where it should be.
I agree with you. More of my mindset is, okay, trying to where is David Poyle's head right now? And say they do win these next three games.
Then.
And he decides, you know, we're not going to sell at the deadline. How would that make you feel?
I think it would be a mistake. I think it would be a mistake, and it would be one of those things that if I'm wrong, I will happily admit that I'm wrong. But I don't – I mean, I think if you did that and you basically stood pat, which is what he would do, I don't think he would acquire anything, then you're going to be in the same position that you have been. You might get in, and if you do get in, you'll probably get beat the first round. And it'll be just what it's been. And then, you know – now, you don't have – the good thing is – a lot of the assets we're talking about selling, you could wait till the summer because you don't have, you know, UFAs. You have some RFAs, but you would still own their rights, and so you could move it. You could do it this summer, but I know that the fans would go up in arms about that.
I would be interested, and text us on our text line or call in. Would you rather see them make no moves at the trade deadline and just squeak in, just squeak into the playoffs, or would you rather them, you know, spearhead this and make some trades at the deadline and knock into the playoffs?
I think I can answer that question. Listen, for the people, I want to hear from the people.
We think we can, but I have seen some interesting different takes on that.
615-737-1025. We will take your calls and texts on that. Coming up next, plus what type of change outside of the players do we believe could happen at some point? Robbie Stanley at the bottom of the hour. It's Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
It's always the same thing, isn't it? When everybody gets frustrated, you can't trade, you know, 20 players. You can make a change in management. You can make a change in coaching. And oftentimes, teams do that. I for sure think that's always the easiest road. And I'm not prepared to take an easy road. This is a team responsibility. I mean, you cannot, for me, separate the coaches and the players for where we are right now. And everybody has to do a better job. I mean, there, as you're talking in this interview, I guarantee you that John Hines and his coaching staff are as frustrated as anybody. But it's I just don't think that is the problem with our hockey club. I think our players have played better. And again, we have nobody that is having a career year with our team. And, you know, again, that's the responsibility. The guys got to step up and play better. I fully believe that we have a team that is capable of making playoffs. I fully believe that we have individual players that have not played their best this year. So, again, I'm a team guy, and it starts with me, and we all have to be better.
That was David Poyle, Preds GM, last week on Robbie and Rex Road. Good song choice, Nick. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. And whether you put it on the coach, make a coaching change, what have you. And I have said this, and I stand by this. This is not all on John Hines. It is a collective. And I, in some ways, feel for John. Because I do think he's thrown everything but the kitchen sink. And maybe he has thrown the kitchen sink at this point. At this team, it's just been inconsistent and a roller coaster ride. And unfortunately, the way this works, and David Poyle said it there, he doesn't like taking the easy way out. And if you look at his history, this organization has had three head coaches in his history. Peter LaViolette was the only one that he fired midseason. You know, Barry Trotz was a mutual parting of the ways, if you want to call it that. But that was at the end of the season. And then, you know, I think he maybe had the same amount when he was the GM of the Washington Capitals. So he doesn't like making coaching moves. He's very, very loyal. But I think it, you know, at some point, you know, if the message is getting lost, whether it's the right message or not, the right system, you know, if they're not listening, then unfortunately there's a change you're going to have to make. I don't think it's going to be now. I don't think it really matters now if they were to do it. And, you know, people that are asking the question, is David the right one, you know, to sell at the trade deadline, or should you make a GM change now? No, you should not make a GM change right now. It just that what is that going to do?
We all saw what an in-season GM change looks like, or firing.
Right. And here's the thing that I think people aren't necessarily putting together. If ownership all of a sudden did something that they have shown no sign of doing at all, and they go, hey, David, thanks for 25 years, you're out. Well, who do you think takes over? I don't know if it would be Brian Poyle, but it might be Scott Nichol, or it'd be one of his lieutenants. Mm-hmm. So it would be somebody cut from that cloth. You know, you're not going to go out on the street right now and go, hey, guy that has no familiarity with this roster whatsoever, can you come here and work the trade deadline and the draft for us?
Yeah, listen, people can say, you know, they don't like some of the moves that David Poyle has made either, but you don't want that to happen, Chase, what you just laid out right there, having somebody making moves for your organization who hasn't had at least just the experience in the NHL that David Poyle has. And I think something also important to mention, too, is for everybody, you know, calling for John Hines' firing, who's going to hire your next head coach? It's going to be David Poyle. So, you know, when you look at this situation, I think it's really, really hard to pinpoint one issue because they're all just playing a role, whether it's the player's execution on the ice, whether it's, you know, Hines having trouble getting his message across to the players, whether it's the moves that David Poyle has made. But I think something important to mention, which sometimes people don't seem to realize, is, okay, well, you don't like David Poyle's moves, and you know that the ownership probably won't fire him, but you want John Hines to get fired, which then would equal David Poyle hiring a new coach.
Bingo. Now, I think there is one person in particular, if David were to bring in as the head coach, that fans would probably be okay with. That would be the guy that I
Bear Trotz.
Yeah, just mentioned in the mutually parting ways. And look, I say this, I like John a lot. John and I have really hit it off. I think he's a very good man. I think he's sometimes judged unfairly.
I agree.
As a coach, you know, I think you know you can't. Okay, he's never won a Stanley Cup. He's never, you know, like the playoff success maybe hasn't been there. He was in a rebuild with New Jersey, and he took over this team mid COVID, and you know, there's a lot of factors there.
Mid-COVID showed that he was able to get the most out of these players last year, or at least your top stars, right, that we've talked on a bunch of times. But people are like, we want a young head coach to develop players. Okay. I mean, we've seen some good things from some of the young players,
sure,
right? But then on the flip side, you knock him for not having a Stanley Cup or not making a run in the playoffs. Okay, but you want a young head coach to develop your young players. But if you go try to get a veteran head coach who's won a Stanley Cup, do you think he's going to want to come to this roster, Chase?
Yeah, not right now. No, and the other thing, too, is what I've seen is the same thing that I felt and was a part of and saw in the early 2000s. The Titans become the Titans, and what do? The first year that they're in that stadium and they're called the Titans, they go to the Super Bowl, and they lose on 1 yard short with Kevin Dyson. And so our thought was, man, this is a really good team. They'll be back next year and the year after that. And they're going to win like 5 Super Bowls. And it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be a dynasty.
Because that's what we have now. Well, guess what? They never went back.
Still happened.
Got close, but they never went back. And so you kind of learned as a sports fan of, ooh, this is hard. It's hard to win championships in professional sports. And some fans, you know what they did? They said, deuces, I'm out. And then when they got good again, it's like, all right, I'm back. What's
the worst? Do not be a fan like that.
Well, then there were fans that jumped on in 2017. And you know what? That's fine. I will never fault a fan base for growing because of success. I don't do that. There were like diehards since day one that went through, you know, building from scratch. It was like, oh, these bandwagoners jumping on. Like, come on, we got room. Come on, get on here. But understand that it doesn't run's end. They come to an end. Well, the run came to an end. And now you have some of those fans that are like, you know, screw everybody, fire everybody. You know, I don't want to just make the playoffs. I want to win. Like, okay, we all want to win. But It's hard. It's hard to win championships. With that said, I get the frustration of being just good enough to get in and then do nothing with it. Mm-hmm. And that is where I think the organization and David and everybody involved, they do have to look themselves in the mirror and go, okay, we've tried this thing every way we know how, except for, you know, maybe taking a couple steps back where we're not going to make the not a full-on rebuild,
mm-hmm.
but a retool enough where we get younger and we're developing these young players, and the pressure of making the play, we just like, if we make it, great. If we don't, let's just get better for the next couple of years and then gear up and go after it again. Because if they do it right, you can get one more run at it with Forsberg and Yossi and maybe even Saros.
So a competitive rebuild?
I don't like using that phrase because that has come back to bite David, I think.
So, Chase, you know, I got here a year and a half ago into this market. And, you know, just like learning about the Preds and learning about the Titans and everything and looking at where both franchises are right now. I think back to 2019, right? Ryan Tannehill, comeback player of the year.
Tana Thrill.
Right. That was the AFC championship year. You look at the Preds. That was President's Trophy year. Right. Both at very high. Was that? That was President.
No, it was the year before.
So 20. Okay.
19 was Dallas.
Oh, okay. So it was 2018, but in the same realm of things, they were coming off the 2017 season, which was very successful for the Preds, right? Both franchises at a tip-top level, right, when it comes to the NHL and the NFL. And after that, you know, we haven't seen anything to that level since. I mean, the Titans with the one seed last year, but then we all know what happened with that. So, you know, I kind of look at both franchises right now and the cores they have, older cores in the league. Derrick Henry for the Titans side of things. You've got UC Saros and Yossi on the Preds. Some star guys who are known throughout the league, but then not the best rosters. So do you think that both organizations have just tried to draw out this window too long and, you know, it's finally time for both of them to turn that page?
I think the windows they've tried to hold them open mm-hmm. with everything possible. Like, and now it's being held open with a straw and it's going to collapse. I mean, eventually you have to know when to get up from the table.
And I think both of them are in same-ish positions right now.
I agree. And it's tough to admit that, hey, it's time. But, you know, I think that they need to. And they'll come out on the other side better for it
mm-hmm.
if you retool and take a few steps back. You take two steps back, and if you do it right, you can go five steps forward. That's just what it needs to be. Let's squeeze in Matt real quick. Matt, welcome in.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, thanks, guys, for taking my call. So a really weird situation happened last night with the game. It was honestly the first time I can say in 20 years that I wasn't tracking that they were playing. I saw a tweet by Jeremy K. Gover, and that's how I knew that the Preds had played last night. Like, as a person who religiously follows this team 82 games a year for the last 20 years, just for some reason I had become apathetic to the point that they were actually playing. And I would say that my feelings have crossed over to just an honest feeling of hopelessness. With, you know, thinking that everything in this organization, from the ownership all the way down to the broadcast team, it just seems like something is broken with the Nashville Predators. And to a point that you were making earlier, I hope we do trade Saros, and it's not because of any anger or anything. It's that I don't want to watch another young, brilliant Finnish netminder languish on this mediocre team. I would love to see that kid go somewhere and have a chance to win a cup. He deserves that. It's not fair for us to hog another brilliant Finnish netminder when David Poile can't draft talent. I would love to see Carl Taylor called up. If that would happen, that would probably cure a little bit of the fan base's apathy toward the team, because they're losing the diehards like me. I mean, I've got 15 Nashville Predators jerseys hanging up in my closet right now, and I don't want to wear any of them right now. I mean, and again, I'm a diehard, but it's become really, really sad to not have any hope.
All right. Thanks for the call,
Matt. Thanks for the call,
Matt. Appreciate it. And I think a lot of fans feel that way. And that, you know, I think David Poyle and Sean Henry, I mean, they've been around a long time. You know, Sean's been with, you know, now two successful organizations mm-hmm. in his career in Tampa and here. They know how this works, and they know it's a roller coaster ride, and, you know, that things are going bad. Everybody's pointing at you and, like, you should get fired and all that stuff. And then, you know, when it comes back up, everybody's like, oh, yeah, David Poyle, woo, he knows everything.
David, let's go to Broadway.
You know, I mean, and that's just – that's how it works. And if you know, it's just sticking with it and trusting the process. But I do believe that they're at a point where I would start looking at the mm-hmm. future and not so much right now with this team. We'll see what Robbie Stanley has to think, has to say. We'll talk to him next. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Back here on Chase and Michelle, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic, hanging out with you. Let's talk to one half of Robbie and Rex Road, morning 6 to 9 here on 1025, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley is here with us. Hello, Rob. How you doing?
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Michelle. I'm great. How are y'all doing?
You know, we're good. We're just fixing the Predators' problems one trade at a time is, I guess, is how it's going right now. But, you know, I heard yours and Joe's discussion this morning. Michelle and I have been having the discussion. I said last week, even after, you know, losing to Arizona and getting the overtime win against Philadelphia, coming back from the All-Star break in general, the weekend starting Thursday with Boston was going to, for me, decide what I was going to do. Well, they went 1-2. They got absolutely boat raced by the best team in the league. They did put up a touchdown against Florida. Okay, that was great. They were down the entire game yesterday against Minnesota, tied up with 47 seconds left, only to have their hearts ripped out. They're not getting the points that they need right now. So I am in. It's time. It's time to start making phone calls. It's time to start making moves. I don't believe in full-on rebuilds, but I do think this team needs to start looking at the future and not so much right now. What do you think?
Well, I'm with you. I said it after the Boston game, and I stand by it now. Like, it's time for the Predators to sell. And I know that, you know, they're not mathematically out of it, and they've got three games that – quite frankly, they should win, and they better win coming up against Vancouver, San Jose, and Arizona. But, like, if you're David Poyle, if they win those three games, like, should your opinion of what this team is really be swayed by wins against Vancouver, San Jose, and Arizona? I would say no. And mathematically, they're just they're in a spot right now where you got a 9.6% chance to make the playoffs, according to MoneyPuck, and there's nothing that this team has shown all year long that convinces me that they have what it takes to go on the type of run that's going to be required, number one, to get in the playoffs, and number two, to do anything of consequence when you get in there. So if it's me, the decision's already made. I am selling. I'm not convinced that David Poyle has fully arrived there yet, but I also don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that on our show last week he talked about, you know, doesn't feel like this team is a buyer and that selling could be an option at some point. Pierre LeBrun reported last week that the Predators basically needed to get on a heater to avoid selling off some pieces. Like, they're not just pulling this information out from nowhere. So, like, I think David Poyle knows what the situation is. I think he knows where his team is. And there's nothing that they've done over the course of the past week that would change my mind on that front. So I'm with you. I think the Predators need to sell.
So I think there's a group of fans that, you know, agree with you or agree with us on this. And then there's a group of fans that they have blamed one person since the very beginning, since he was hired. They didn't like John Hines for whatever reason. And so there's this thought of just fire John Hines, bring in a new coach, whether it's Carl Taylor or Barry Trotz or anyone else that's available, and that'll fix it. I don't buy that because I don't put all this on John Hines. I know how this works. I'm realistic, but you know that you can't fire all the players and trade all the players. And so eventually, you know, the coach might be the one that loses his job, but I'm not buying that if they made a move today, that would fix anything.
No, I mean, look, this is a league where we have seen coaches get fired before, and for whatever reason, that puts a shot in the arm of the team, and they go on some run. Quite frankly, if they were going to do that, they should have done it already. Like, we're five games away from the deadline, so they're not going to do that. I don't think at this point it serves any purpose to do that in the season. Now, you know, if things continue to go this way and they decide to sell off and they miss the playoffs, then I think John Hines is probably not going to be the coach next year. And I think that is fair. That's justified. I get all those things. But to your point, Chase, like, I don't know how you can watch this team, particularly if you've watched them for any length of time, dating back to, let's just say, the discussion y'all were just having about 2017, even if you started watching the team then. I don't know how you could watch this team and just think that it's only the coach. Like, they have parts of their roster that are just broken. I mean, they're paying Ryan Johansson $8 million a year, and he's not close to an $8 million a year player. They're playing Matt Duchene $8 million a year, and he's not an $8 million a year player. Mikhail Granlund's not a $5 million a year player right now. I mean, they have parts of their roster that is broken. And, you know, could a new coach come in and help? Maybe, but, like, Duchene's 32. Johansson's going to be 31 coming up in July. Granlund's on the wrong side of 33. Like, I can't see this really getting all that much better as they move forward here with those guys. So, look, do I think that John Hines is free of blame for this? No, I don't. I mean, I gave him a lot of credit for getting those guys to play well last year and to get the best out of some of those guys, and he's not doing it this year. Like, for whatever reason, it's just not working this year. So, I think he's part of the blame that needs to be given to this team, but he's not the complete and whole picture. And quite frankly, I don't really know how you can watch this team and think that he is.
We've got Robbie Stanley on with us from Robbie and Rex Road. Robbie, you touched on some specific players, you know, who have big contracts currently right now, just point blank not producing for the Nashville Predators. If you, let's put your GM hat on really quick, who ideally would you like to try to move off of before the trade deadline, if you could, if another team would take their contract?
Well, look, they're going to have to make a decision on Dante Fabbro at some point. I mean, quite frankly, I think the decision's probably already been made. Like, you're not keeping Carrier and Fabbro next year, to me, if you're keeping Ekholm and or McDonough. Like, the Fabbro part of this, quite frankly, I thought he was terrible yesterday, and it's just been more of the same with Fabbro for the last 2 years. So that's a decision that they could make at the deadline, or they could wait until the summer and make those decisions. But to me, like, if you decide you're going to sell, that tells me that you are recognizing that you need to change the direction of this team. Like, there's not a guy on the roster that I would not be listening on. And that includes Matthias Ekholm. That includes UC Saros. That includes Ryan McDonough. I mean, there's not one guy that I wouldn't at least be listening on. And you don't have to make all of your decisions at the deadline. But, like, if you can get a first-round pick for Matthias Ekholm, I'd be listening to that. If you can get if somebody is willing to take on Ryan McDonough's contract and have him come in and be a valuable piece of a Stanley Cup run down the stretch, I'd be listening on that. I'd be listening on Saros. Like, I don't think that there's much of an appetite to trade him right now if you're the Predators, but you have to at least listen to what's out there, because right now everybody wants to talk about rebuild. I'm of the opinion they probably should rebuild. I just don't think they can. Like, they have roster, they have pieces of their roster that they can't move. I mean, you cannot move Johansson's contract. You cannot move Duchene's contract. I think it's going to be really difficult to move Granlund's contract. And if you can't move those guys, it's going to be very difficult to rebuild. So I would be listening on everyone if the Predators decide to go the route of selling. And then you have to make your best decisions from there. The good thing you have if you're David Poile is you don't have to make a decision by the deadline. If you don't like the offers, you can wait until the summer, because most of the guys we're talking about are not free agents. But if you're going the route to sell, you need to change up the team, and I'd be listening on everybody if I'm Poile.
So let's take a look, you know, not say by the trade deadline, but in the offseason this summer, you mentioned some guys you might not be able to move off of. Do you think that this team, with a little bit retooling, that they could be back in, say, in a couple years, a Stanley Cup contender?
No, I don't. I mean, I think right now there's too much money tied up in guys that they have on their roster that's just going to be too hard to overcome. Now, could you buy out a Ryan Johansson or a Matt Duchene at the end of this season? Maybe. I have no idea what the Predators ownership group, their appetite would be for something like that. But right now, I mean, this core group, a lot of which is still there from 2018, 2019, 2020, they're not good enough to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, they're not good enough. So if you retool it, it sounds great in theory, but what are you retooling? Like, you're giving up an Ekholm or McDonough at that point, and you got to retool the defense because I don't think Favreau is going to be a part of their plans as they move forward. And you look on the forward side of things, in order to retool the forward group, in my opinion, you have to move on from a Johansson and a Duchene or a Granlund, and that's going to be really difficult to do because you've got some young guys coming up that I think could be good players. But right now, you start to look at the lineup. Like, if you're paying Ryan Johansson $8 million and you don't buy him out, he's going to have to play. Matt Duchene is going to have to play. Mikael Granlund's going to have to play, and those guys are locked in long-term. So that's why I think the Predators probably should rebuild and tear it down, but I don't think they can.
He is Robbie Stanley, one half of Robbie and Rex Road Morning, 6 to 9 here at 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Appreciate it, Rob. Good discussion, and we'll see what happens.
Thanks, Rob. See you tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate y'all having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Robbie Stanley joining us here on the show. We'll see. I mean, I think we all kind of share the same opinion, but we'll see what they do moving forward. Coming up next, we've basically been doing the power play the whole show, so we're going to shift gears a little bit, get into some college hoops because it was a big weekend around here, and somebody on this show is pretty happy with the result. We will discuss that coming up next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
All I'm saying to them, don't listen to all the garbage. And if you hear it, turn it off. Turn your computer off. And just have good thoughts about this team. Because this team is trying, they're fighting, they're great kids. And I've said all along, we were going to break through.
That's John Calipari, Kentucky head coach. Michelle's ready to give him a lifetime contract.
I think he already has one.
To remain at Kentucky. And I think earlier in the year, her and most fans were ready to see him off to Texas. So
that
there you go.
That is very true. That is very true.
That's how it works. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. I got to give Michelle credit. She called it. I thought Tennessee would win, and they didn't. Kentucky took care of things at Rupp, and therefore Tennessee just reeling right now. As Vanderbilt continues to roll, they beat Auburn at Memorial, 67-65. Great game for them. They've won five in a row now. Bama continues to roll. Kentucky beats Tennessee, 66-54. And that's where things are in the SEC with the teams that we care about around here. So I asked this question because I told you before the show that I was going to ask this. Do you believe that Rick Barnes' seat is starting to get warm? I'm not saying hot, but warm. With the stretch that they've been on as of late.
I don't. I really don't think it is starting to get warm.
They do have injuries, so I'll give them that. You got some guys hurt.
Well, I mean, if you look at this team, I think the first time they lost to Kentucky earlier this season was their first loss where fans felt just really disappointed because Kentucky was showing signs of not being a tournament team, you know, not being able to figure things out, not playing well at all at the beginning of the season. I think it's also important to remember that their starting lineup, all five of them, had not played together other than Oscar Tshiebwe and Sevier Wheeler at the beginning of the season. And they've had so many different guys become that starting five. And now, at this point in the year, they're finally starting to figure it out. Whereas Tennessee, you know, at the beginning of the season, have a lot of their guys back, right? They've got Zakai Ziegler back. They've got Santiago Vesuby, Josiah Jordan-James, Plavsvich. Like, a lot of those guys are back. So, you know, we've seen it early on. I think a loss now, I mean, it was in Rupp Arena. It's hard to win at another team's place in the SEC. Tennessee still has a great resume. Looks like they're going to be a 3 seed right now heading into the tournament. They won the SEC last year, which hasn't been done for Tennessee in, I think that was the first time ever they won the SEC tournament last year for men's basketball. You know, you look at the Grant Williams teams that made a little bit of a run. No, not a Final Four run, but had the talent to. this team, I'm not sure if they have a Final Four talent, but if they made it there, I wouldn't be surprised. But I think the reason people talk about
I think a lot of people thought they did have that at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, no, 100% they did. I think we've seen some of their weaknesses, or people have maybe figured them out a little bit more as, you know, the season has gone on, or we've just seen some of their guard play not great. And when Vescovy isn't shooting great or Ziegler isn't shooting great, then this team looks a lot different. I also mentioned when Zakai Ziegler gets in foul trouble as your point guard, you do not have a backup point guard, which is crucial for this team. He can be such an asset to your team. And if he gets in foul trouble, and he pretty much didn't play a majority of the first half in Rupp Arena on Saturday, the team looks a lot different, Chase.
Sure.
But when you talk about hot seat.
I didn't say hot seat. I said warm.
Okay. When you talk about warming up, the expectations are really high for this Tennessee basketball program, especially after you've seen teams have success in these last couple of years. But my question is, okay, who would you rather have? This is an interesting one. Would you rather have Rick Barnes or Bruce Pearl?
Me personally, Bruce Pearl.
Why? Because he's won in March?
Because he's won in March. Exactly. That's why. And to your point, all right, you just said something. We've been talking about this with the Predators.
Mm-hmm.
So injuries aside, I get that Tennessee's had to deal with some of that. But you named, you know, some of the talent that this team has. And, you know, earlier in the season, there are a lot of people thinking like, hey, this is a Final Four type roster. Yet the players, the guard play hasn't been what it should be. And the play in general hasn't been what it should be. Well, whose job is it to make sure that the play is what it needs to be?
Well, see, that's a tricky question because, I mean, we saw them have great guard play when they beat Texas, who is going to be a one seed, you know, heading into March Madness, beat them 82-71 a couple weeks ago. That's just 2 weeks ago. The thing is, they're getting open looks. They're just not falling. They're getting good shots. They're setting up, you know, good offensive plays. But, I mean, for instance, I mean, they missed a bunch of wide open layups,
sure,
wide open shots. But to your point, how do you win in March? You win with good guard play.
You do. And here's my point. I'm not advocating for Rick Barnes to be fired. Now, I have said that I don't trust him in March. He has underachieved in March, both at Texas and now at Tennessee. But this is the what, you know, cracks me up when we're making these arguments is, yeah, the players got to play better, and they're the ones actually out on the court, and they got to execute.
Mm-hmm.
All right? I do not deny that at all. But we can use some of the same arguments with Tennessee and with Rick Barnes that you could use with the Predators right now, that you're not getting the most out of the players. And I do think that the seat is warming up. I don't anticipate a change at all coming, even if they – you know, now, if they get knocked out in the first round of the tournament, then maybe.
That's very disappointing.
You know, then it might happen. But I think this is a very disappointing stretch that they need to shake this off going into tournament play because you got to get hot at the right time.
Okay, well, the interesting thing, I mean, I do not compare them to the Predators because the Predators have been just a huge disappointment as a whole, whereas UT has had some losses that they should have won. For instance, they lose on a buzzer beater to Vanderbilt. Yeah, they didn't put themselves in place to win, but they could have won that. They lose on a buzzer beater to them. They lose on a buzzer beater to Missouri. They beat the number one team in the country by far. They, you know, break their undefeated stretch in the SEC. They've beat Gonzaga this year. Like, their resume is, they have a great resume. I don't expect this Tennessee team to go, you know, undefeated, right, throughout the entire year. They've had some amazing wins, whereas the Predators have been, you know, a huge disappointment as a whole. But when you talk about March, on the flip side, the format of the tournament is so hard because you have to win so many games close together and you don't have the chance to lose one and then bounce back like we've seen this Tennessee team do. But I think a lot of the hot seat conversation or warming up seat conversation with Rick Barnes will depend on March. And I also think something also to, you know, put into play is Danny White didn't hire him.
Yeah, he didn't. I don't know if that matters, but, you know, it does in some cases. But like on this one, I don't know if it does, but it could. So it's certainly a thought. Let's squeeze Chris in real quick.
Hey, Chris,
what's up?
Hey. Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. First off, correction. The Vols actually won the SEC tournament back in 1979/80, where they beat Kentucky in the final. So there's that. But I would actually disagree with you, Michelle, on this one. I think that the Preds and the Vols are kind of almost in the same boat. They are, and I love what somebody said on Twitter on Saturday after the game, they are consistently inconsistent. They win games that they don't, and they lose games that they should. And I'm not saying Rick Barnes should be fired. I think he's – I agree with Chase. I think his seat is getting a slightly warm just because of the inconsistency. And, I mean, I could honestly see the Vols winning the first game in the SEC tournament, but then losing the next game in the SEC tournament and then losing again in March, you know, kind of the same way. It's just that sense of inconsistency that we've seen not only this year but years prior, at least since, you know, Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield were in there. And it's almost the same way with the Preds. You know, you see players being brought in that should be good, but then we don't build enough around them. And so you have that sense of inconsistency, you know, following the Preds, following the Vols. And, you know, earlier y'all were talking Titans. The Titans actually did something that we didn't think would happen. They fired their general manager. And they said, we're going to move in a different direction. If the Preds continue on this path, ownership has got to sit there and go, we've done the same thing year after year after year. We make the playoffs and we fall out year after year after year in the first round. Something has to change. Poile, I mean, I love Poile. He's done great things for this franchise, but he's got to realize it's time to get out.
Mac, quick question. Question for you, quick. I've got a little two-parter quickly. Do you think the Preds have the talent on their roster currently to win a Stanley Cup?
No.
Do you think the Vols Do you think the Vols have the talent on their current roster to win a national championship right now?
That is a better question because I think they do, but what we have seen with the Vols is their defense is good enough to win in March. The flip side of that coin is their offense is not good enough to win in March. And that's the thing is our defense can hold you guys. They can hold their opponents off. But can the offense make enough shots to keep us in the game? And like you said, if Ziegler goes out, who do we have behind him? And we don't have the answer to that particular question.
Thanks for the call,
next
Chris.
Next year will be
– Sorry, got to run on that. Thanks for the call. Good points. I mean, good, you know, and good question by you. So, and all, you know, we spent most of the time on the Vols, but a fantastic win by Vandy's. They continue to roll and putting themselves in a very, very good position into the SEC tournament. We'll get back into the Preds coming up next. Could a former name be in play when it comes to the Predators? We'll discuss that next. Chase and Michelle, 105.063 The Game.